You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
We welcome you back to our program, second hour. Guests are lining up like cars at a NASCAR event. Mullen and Herb Street in the next hour. Let's get back to the calls and talk to Tom, who is on the air. Hello, Tom.
Hello.
Good afternoon.
How are you today?
I am well. Thank you very much.
Basically, I called to discuss the Feinbaum plan.
Okay.
Now, what this is it's an idea that I have come up with that borrows from a lot of different ideas for bowl games and playoffs and the playoff. There are two parts, both in, teams in and out. And I'm going to run over the end real quick because I think that's kind of like self-explanatory with the way things have been going. It's probably going to end up like with eight teams, mainly one from the Power Five, one from the Group of Five, two independents. But I think they should rotate these in the minor bowls, like the New Orleans Bowl, the Belk Bowl, so that the cities themselves would be large enough for the infrastructure so that all the teams would be able to go, and that they'd start these 2 weeks after the end of the championship season so that everybody would have 2 weeks to prepare, and that would be 2 weeks, and then another 2 weeks you would have the Christmas games, and then right after that you could have the championship season. But those are the ones that are in. My favorite part, the part that I'm most proud of myself, is the second part. And this is for teams that don't make it, and I'm hoping that this idea maybe can hopefully gain a little traction. First thing I would do is I would make all seniors who have completed the year ineligible to play in the bowl game. But I would make all first semester freshmen who have actually completed a year's work and academically eligible to play. Now, what that would do is that would allow the games to be a preview of next year's team. It would allow the fans to go to the bowl games that they choose and actually see their team that they might see next year. I think that might help generate more fan interest, more eyes from TVs to see what each next year's team would look like. And therefore, it might be more fun and drive more bowl attendance. I can remember when bowl attendance at all the bowls were really, really high. And it was all real important. And with the playoffs now, it's gotten to where it's less important. So to me, part of the plan is to try to make sure that you take care of both the people that are in and out of the playoffs. And to try to even the field, I would like for all conferences to have the same amount of games. But for people like, and I hate to use them as an example, but I'm going to use them. I'm just going to say a team like, say, Swanee, in their conference, if they were eligible, if they had a high APR, that they would get more consideration rather than just wins and losses in the football game for participation in a bowl game. Because that's really what the NCAA really tries to push anyway, is the student athlete. So this way, the bowl game would be a reward for the student athletes, the school that pushed the student athletes. It would be a way for the teams themselves to have game-type environment so that the coaches themselves would know. And even new coaches, if you'd fired your old coach, could help participate in the game plan so that they'd have a better idea of what they wanted to do for the next game. I think it might drive more interest in the opposite bowls and, as a consequence, more interest in college game in general. But I call it the Feinbaum playoff bowl plan because I really don't want credit. I have a particular team that I root for, but one of the things that you have taught me over the years, and I've been following you for a long time, we met once at the old Rue Burris when you used to show up on Fridays for... when you show up on Fridays for, was it Sports and Comedy Relief? But that's a separate issue. You've taught me to look at the game from 30,000 feet. And right now, I think the bowl games and the playoff games need a serious shot in the arm. And to help bring it all back to where I think it needs to be. And so in thinking about it and your show and listening to your callers and all, I've been trying to think of a way to get everybody back involved again, and not just the playoffs, but in bowl games and in the interest of the game itself, because it's fixing to change, and it's going to change a lot. And I'm afraid that some of the lesser teams will get lost, and that can't help the overall game. You know, when you've got this image and likeness thing out there, if you've got a guy that wants to go out there and all he's interested in is his own money, I mean, he's going to go with one of the top five or six teams. That's where he'll have more money. And is that fair and right for one of the other teams that are in the conference? I'm not so sure. There are all kinds of things that open when you – cans of worms that get open when you get into that. And I'm not here to talk about that. I'm just wanting to try to figure out a way to instigate interest back in the overall game itself, in every game that you play, and make the bowl game, which I always thought was a reward for the team itself to have a chance to have some fun and enjoy themselves, to be more than just fodder where people sit around and talk about, well, there's too many bowl games. If I'm a player in one of those too many bowl games, it may be the time of my life. And anyway, that's why I called today, Paul. I appreciate your time. I hope I have twisted an idea or two in somebody. And thank you very much for your time.
Tom, thank you. Very thoughtful conversation there, and a very interesting and unique perspective. Appreciate it. Good to have you back here on our show. Mike is up next in South Carolina. Hello, Mike.
Paul, how are you today?
I am well. Thank you.
I'm sorry I asked that. You answer that 100 times a day. I'm sorry.
But by the way, it changes, though.
I'm sorry?
It changes from caller to caller, so it's not repetitive.
Anyway, I have a few questions and a couple of predictions I want to ask you for.
You got it.
First, ESPN's rankings just came out. And I wanted to ask you about Oklahoma and Iowa State being so high. We haven't seen them high, especially Iowa State, but Oklahoma either in a very long time. I want to ask you if you feel like that's legitimate. I also wanted to ask you about the Clemson-Georgia game. I wanted to ask you who you feel like is likely to win that game. And I also want to ask you, who is it more important for them to win that game?
That's a good question. I had thought I was really leaning heavily towards Georgia until the George Pickens injury, and now I'm going to wait a little longer. In fact, I think I predicted Georgia a couple of months ago, but I'm pulling that off the board. I don't think it's critical for Georgia. I think it's more important for Clemson, frankly, because Clemson does not play the kind of schedule that Georgia does. And Clemson, I haven't looked at their schedule that closely this year, but last year, remember, Clemson lost to Notre Dame, but they could make it up again against Notre Dame. If Clemson loses that game and they were to drop another game along the way, they're not getting in the playoff, even with an ACC championship, where Seth made a good point. I'm not sure I'm totally in agreement that they have a game to burn after that. Now, if Georgia loses to Clemson and then, let's say, drops a game late in the year against Auburn or Florida, they're not guaranteed, even with an SEC championship over Alabama. I know it sounds like they should be, but if it's a logjam, it's conceivable. Let's say Alabama only loses one game, they could perhaps back in, as crazy as that sounds.
That does sound crazy if you leave the SEC championship.
Yeah, but if an undefeated number one ranked Alabama team, I mean, I know we're getting insanely crazy here on April 14th, but let's say Alabama has had a dominating season, has been number one all year long, and loses to Georgia 28-27 on a missed two-point conversion, and Georgia has a loss to Clemson, which may have lost a game, and then a late loss, then where are they ranked is the question.
Well, what do you think about the Oklahoma and Iowa State situation there? Is that a legitimate?
Yeah, I think it's
top four.
I buy Oklahoma. I frankly think Oklahoma is a legit playoff team. I've seen Iowa State blow way too many big games, and I'm not saying I'm not a believer. I think Campbell is a superb coach and it's a really good program. But I'm not putting a lot of stock in them. I'm really not. We're up against a break. We have the athletic director of Tennessee State on next. How did they end up with Eddie George as the head coach? Eddie didn't completely tell us yesterday. He told us about the difficulty of the decision, but Dr. Mickey Allen will join us shortly, and we look forward to talking to him again. We've talked to him before, and he's really a great guest.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
And we welcome you back. It is great to talk to all of you. And you may remember about a year ago, as things were at a standstill, we had a great conversation with Dr. Mickey Allen about him becoming the athletic director at Tennessee State. Some of you may remember the name as a proud member of the 1998 national championship team at Tennessee, but he's been busy lately talking and gathering a new coach. And we had that new coach on yesterday, Eddie George. Mickey, thanks so much for rejoining us. We had a really good time last year talking about your journey and about your family's history at TSU. But I would be remiss if I didn't get right to the story of the day. Good afternoon, first of all.
Hey, good to see you again, Paul. You know, I know we did this about a year ago, but things have changed. But I've been recruiting.
They have.
Let's just say that.
They really have. And I we had Eddie on yesterday, and he he talked a lot about the difficulty of the decision, and considering everything that he has going in his life. But I would like to ask you if you would go back a little bit, and because I love the process of stories like this. How did it begin?
Well, you know, every AD has a list of candidates and potential coaches. Obviously, we have great leadership here at Tennessee State University with President Glover. And me and President Glover, we were just talking about, who would be a good fit if we had to make a change from a head coaching perspective. And, I had a couple names, and Eddie was at the top of that list just because, we're in Nashville, and, I was looking for someone that could come in and just – be able to connect with our young people and inspire them. And I was looking for somebody with championship pedigree, someone that was versatile and made sense for the Nashville community. We know where we are. We're in one of the hottest cities in the country. And, you know, Eddie, he brings a lot to the table, and I've always watched him and admired how he's handled himself and conducted himself off the field in his other endeavors. And I said, hey, I know this will be bold, but Dr. Glover, let's go after him. It started with a phone call, which took him by surprise. We got a wow, you know, when we said, hey, Eddie, would you consider being the next head football coach at Tennessee State University? There was a pause. He says, wow. And he says, me? And he says, you're talking about the program that was built by the great John Merritt and Richard Dent and Claude Humphreys and Joe Gillum, right? And so he knew the tradition right off. And I said, yeah, there's something here, but we'll just have to outline it and show him what resources we could put behind him so he could be successful in the OVC and create that championship winning culture that we want back here. That Tennessee State was known for.
And Nikki, from start to finish, how long did the process last?
Over several weeks. You know, we obviously we had a unique season this year, being the OVC elected to play a spring calendar football season. You know, it didn't go well for us in the spring in terms of our win-loss record. And, you know, I just felt we needed a change of direction. You know, Coach Rod Reed spent 11 years at the helm. He's an alum and, you know, he'll always be a Tiger for life. Right. But, you know, I just felt that it's time for a new direction. And so it was convincing Eddie that, you know, again, we'd have the resources available for him. You know, I've been an athletic fundraiser in my career, spent a decade at the University of Tennessee in that capacity, and that's going to be important for the next, for the trajectory of this program and for Eddie being successful, is me going out and raising private donations to really be a catalyst for what we want to do and bring this program back to national prominence.
And I know, Alan, Mickey, you did not hire him because he's well known. You hired him because you thought he could lead this program. But I ask you this, Mickey, in the sense that, you know, we've seen this a couple of times lately. We saw Michigan bring back Juwan Howard, and you know, he nearly got to the Final Four. And you know, here recently we've seen Deion Sanders. And just talking to Eddie and talking to Deion a couple of months ago, I mean, there's quite a difference. I mean, they're both extremely well known, but there was no doubt Eddie genuinely is doing this because he cares about giving back. But did either one of those or something else in the past trigger this thought in your mind to go in this direction?
No, you know, I have a great amount of respect of what's going on with Jackson State University. Deion has done wonders in terms of bringing a lot of attention to HBCUs. And he's going to do a fantastic job. You mentioned it, Paul, two different personalities between Prime and Eddie George. And they're going to do and go about their business in different ways. But at the end of the day, our model and this hire was specifically because it was a great fit for our university. Eddie's not going to be able to get us back at that championship level. But this is a university hire. This is a community hire. I firmly believe that what Eddie George is going to mean to our university at large is going to do wonders in terms of not only the excitement, it's going to increase our enrollment, but it's going to, and it's already sent a clear message that we have high expectations and we want leadership that is going to work hard. Eddie's worked for everything that he's ever done, you know, Broadway, creating his own financial firm. There's been a lot of firsts, quote unquote, for Eddie George, but he always figures out a way to deliver. And he's a great workman, and he's a great showman, and you know, he's a great football mind. And I think it's going to come out when he starts his season, right, September the 5th, as we play in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, the Black Pro Football Hall of Fame Classic in Canton, Ohio. And I'm hearing it's going to be on NFL Network. So, hey, what an opportunity to make a splash against Grambling.
Before you go, I'm particularly interested in your process here. When we talked a year ago, you talked about some of the mentors and people that really mattered in your career at Tennessee with Coach Fulmer, and obviously in the past with family members and other friends. Did you lean on any or all of these people as you came to this conclusion, or now that you're on your own as the AD, you had to walk in the woods and figure it out for yourself?
Well, they taught me those. I've had a lot of ADs, worked for a lot of great ADs, Philip Fulmer, Dave Hart, Mike Hamilton. There's a lot of ADs across the country that have been very influential in my life in terms of John Gilbert and so many others. But they've always taught me to listen to others, to just go through a process of assessment and feel. And really connect with the young people that in which you serve. So I've done a lot of asking around with our young people, not only in football, but all of our sports. Hey, what are your needs? You know, what makes your group and your unit tick? And so, you know, in talking with our football team and our kids, you know, they were looking for someone to just be a tone setter, somebody that could get in the trenches with them. You know, and Eddie's going to be able to do that. I think he's still fit enough to get in the sandbox and do those things that really show the kids that, hey, there's a level to this that, you know, I'm going to stretch you. We're going to work hard, but I'm going to be there with you right along the way. And whether it's a pursuit that you have, you want to pursue professional ball, or you want to be, you know, a great ambassador for the program and pursue a career after sports. I've done those things, and that's the Eddie George that I can't wait to be in our program working with our kids. I know this is a bold and different hire. Those ADs and that you referenced, Paul, that have been a part of my life, they taught me to, hey, be comfortable in your own skin, make the decisions necessary for the advancement of your program, and hey, if it's different, or if it's a direction that those don't like, stay firm in it, support it, and that's what I'm going to do here for Eddie George.
Finally, Mickey, and this is a bizarre question, I admit, on the front end, because nobody likes to talk about money, but you're hiring a guy who, you know, at his prime in the NFL was making many, many millions of dollars. How do you discuss compensation with somebody who probably doesn't need the money?
Well, it's better when you're talking to somebody that, you know, that doesn't have the motive that they need that they need the money to do the job, right?
Why are you looking at me when you say that?
But Paul, you know, that was you know, because the you know, the differential in budgets across Power Fives to FCS programs is different. We know that. And the man that I was in front of, this was not about money for him. And, you know, we've had contract requests, and we'll go through that process to get that out there, and it'll get out there. But when it reveals itself, you'll see that money, in comparison to what he's been accustomed to making, that was not the motive. The motive was, hey, I want to get in this space. I want to have an impact on young kids. You know, I want to teach them how to win, and I want to be the best coach possible for Tennessee State University. And, you know, the Tennessee State University is going to be extremely blessed, I believe, for this hire. And we, you know, the sky's the limit. And Paul, the last time I checked, I got up this morning and the sky's big blue.
Well said. Mickey, thank you for coming on. We had a blast the last time, and I'd like you to come back sometime. We can just kick back and talk about your career and the difference of being now in a different place, a different platform, and looking at it through a different prism. All the best, and we really are pulling for you guys.
I appreciate that, Paul. I had a lot of respect for you and, you know, our connection with our alma mater, but I enjoy your work. Thanks for having me on.
You got it. Thanks so much, Mickey Allen from Tennessee State. Really appreciate that. We are going to take a break. By the way, this is not something I intended to talk about today, but you may have seen the news that Bernie Madoff passed away, who concocted one of the greatest frauds and Ponzi schemes in the history of business. He died in prison. He's one of the most notorious business criminals this country has ever had. Does anyone out there have a understanding what connection he may have to what we talk about here every day? I bet one or two of you may remember where he began his college career. We're coming right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
We welcome all of you back, and more of your phone calls at 855-242-7285. I mentioned Bernie Madoff. he was the architect of the largest Ponzi scheme in American history. The paper loss on his scheme was $65 billion. Wow. Let's get back to the calls. And Laura is up next in Alabama. Hello, Laura. Good afternoon.
Hey, Paul, you were asking for the connection.
Yes.
Of Bernie Madoff to your subject matter. He attended the University of Alabama.
He most certainly did for 1 year. And I was
curious. They got rid of him because they knew he was bad news.
I know people that were in fraternities with him that over the years I've run into them. And I believe he left to go to Tufts, but. And I don't know when you were. I know from talking to people that at the time, it was not unusual for New Yorkers and to head to south, and there were some specific reasons. They were also, I think, being recruited. But I think it's a fortunate break for Alabama that he didn't turn out to be a graduate.
Definitely. Well, you know, the 6 degrees of separation to Kevin Bacon. I think it's probably just 5 to the University of Alabama.
Well, I mean, had he been a graduate, then someone could have asked Saban about, his role in the Ponzi scheme. But since he didn't graduate, we can't. It's no longer germane. Hey, well, thank you for sharing that. Appreciate it.
Sure, roll tide.
You got it. And I bet there's some Bernie Madoff fraternity brother out there listening right now. We will continue with more phone calls, and Tom is up next. Good afternoon, Tom.
Hey, Paul. How you doing?
We are doing great. Thank you.
I've been running sports all my life, and I've coached sports all my life, and all my kids play sports, and my grandson's a freshman at Columbia High School in Huntsville, and he plays he plays right tackle on offense and left end on defense. And Stephen A. Smith, he thinks that Bear Bryant's great grandson should be quarterback. And if he don't become a quarterback at Alabama, do you think he'd go to another school?
Yeah, Stephen was on the other day, and he felt like Paul Tyson was challenging. Right now you hear a lot of different things. I mean, I would say after a couple of scrimmages, Bryce Young is clearly in good shape. I can't answer that. I do believe, knowing the family, that he would rather be at Alabama than anywhere else. I think that's self-evident. But, at some point, if he doesn't go the right direction, I think like all kids, he would probably look to go elsewhere. But I don't think we are there yet.
Okay. Love your show.
Thank you. Thank you.
Watch your show every day.
Yeah. And all the best to your son, Tom. Thank you very much. Great to have you on. And Ken is in Mississippi, and you're on the air. Hello, Ken. Good afternoon.
Hi, Paul. I came here to talk about Mississippi State, and that's what I'm going to do.
Okay, sure.
So I've been a State fan my whole life. I'm 14, and I've been going to games since birth. And I find it hard to believe for ESPN to put us this high in the rankings. Preseason, regular season, regardless, I think eight's a bit high. And obviously we're going to have a quarterback battle this year with Jack Abram, Will Rogers, and Sawyer Robertson. But regardless, I don't think that we are that good.
Well, Ken, I think it's a little bit deceiving when you just see the ranking. And I will tell you, even after talking to the person that put the poll together yesterday, I still didn't get it. But I know nothing about algorithms and metrics. I don't know how. I mean, I'm lucky that I can turn on an iPad without screwing up. So I really don't understand it, even though he explained it. I don't really believe it, even though he laid it out. Yeah, I think Mississippi State has a manageable schedule, and that's the main reason why he explained they could perhaps go 8-4, and from a power standpoint, because of the opponents, have a very high ranking. Well, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. Let's check in with Jay, who is in South Carolina. Hello, Jay.
Hey, Paul. How's it going?
Very well.
Just wanted to get your opinion on what do you think Dabo's next step is? I mean, I he's obviously accomplished a lot. I don't know if it'll be ever down in Tuscaloosa, or what do you think his ceiling is? What do you think the next move now that Trevor's gone, Deshaun's in the past? Just kind of what you think, Paul?
I think Dabo will reach a point somewhere where he will itch to go elsewhere. And I know that he would call me right now and say I'm wrong, and he has done that before. There was something that came up last year, about a year ago on the show. About a week later, Dabo's on the phone going, hey, feel like we're friends, but you were wrong about that, even though it's debatable. I don't see the NFL in his future, because I just don't think he could deal with that mentality. And you know, Saban had a hard time with it. And Saban, I think, is far better suited from an adaptability standpoint to that, because he had already been in the NFL. I think Dabo is a college coach. I don't think he will be the choice after Saban. Now, here's the scenario that could always happen. I'm just laying it out. Let's say someone else takes Nick Saban's place and that someone else doesn't succeed. Then you could see Dabo go, you know what, maybe I could be the guy after the guy. I've told this story before. I sat with him 3 years ago, and I was the host of the Alabama Sports Hall of Fame dinner, and he was sitting to my left, and he was being inducted. And I can tell you, it was an important event in his life. I know he's won national championship. He's making $10 million a year, but he was carried away by that. It was a big moment. And that moment told me that maybe sometime he could be convinced to come back to Alabama, but just not yet.
No, thanks for the call, Paul.
Thank you. Yeah. After that, things changed. He had won one national championship, but again, I'm sitting there looking at somebody's emotions like I really am a psychiatrist, but you know, we all have gravitational pulls. We've all been somewhere in our lives, whether it's back at our high school, back at our college, back somewhere like this situation with Eddie George, where it just happened to be the right time. I'm not saying every one of us have gone through that, but there are usually moments in your life, whether it's a relationship, whatever it is, where you go, wow, that's it. You know, I don't think I don't think Dabo is there yet, but it doesn't mean it couldn't happen. We'll take a break. More to come right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Hey, great to have all of you back, and let's get back to the calls. And Josh is up next in Florida. Hello, Josh.
Hey, Mr. Feinbaum. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
I just wanted to say that I think the Gators are going to be a better football team than people give them credit for, and I can't wait until we play Alabama. Everybody's overlooking us. Our quarterback's going to be just fine because he's been there quite a few years, and he's had a good tutelage under Dan Mullen and Kyle Trask. We've got a lot of players coming back. And another thing I wanted to say about Bernie Madoff.
Sure.
65 billion people, or let's just cut that in half, and let's say just like maybe 33 billion people gave their money stupidly to somebody thinking that they were going to enhance that investment. Did you give your money to Bernie Madoff?
Fortunately,
because
no.
I didn't, and I was alive when this.
You know, Josh, I don't know if you remember. I saw some article about it today that there was a guy, a lawyer, who warned the SEC, not the one that we talk about all the time, but the Securities and Exchange Commission, at least five different times for a period of about 7 years, claiming that Madoff was ripping people off, and they did not act on it at all.
You're exactly right, Mr. Feinbaum. You're exactly right. And here's the thing, and you and I, we're the same age. We go back. If it's too good to be true, what is it? It's too good to be true.
Oh, no, you're right, especially when it comes to, I think, financial deals. And we've all been there where somebody comes to us and say, hey, you're not going to believe this. You can really do well. And, you know, some of them you walk away from, and you're right, and sometimes you're wrong, but I would say the odds even out. You're probably better off walking away.
Well, it's kind of funny. These people, I don't know the term for it. They gave their money to Bernie Madoff.
Yeah,
he didn't take it from them. Now, and we have murderers, rapers, child molesters walking the streets today that were in prison not too long ago for that crime. This man spent his death sentence in prison for taking money that people gave to him. Do I say it's okay? No, sir, I do not. Okay, he did commit a crime, but
you know something, Josh. I happen to be
your money away. Like my money's in precious metals, so I don't have to worry about the stock market or Bernie Madoff's. But anyway, you know, I just wanted to make a comment, and thank you for letting me make that comment, Mr. Feinbaum.
Well, thank you. I will.
You have a wonderful day. Be blessed.
Thanks.
And go Gators.
Thanks so much, Josh. And I'll be watching the precious metals market tomorrow morning very closely. Let's check in with Freddie, who is up next. Hello, Freddie. Go right ahead.
Hey, Paul. I want to stir the pot a little bit. I'm going to make this prediction. Max Stewart goes to the 49ers at 3. He goes on to have a better career than Tua, because in the right system, Mac Jones will be a good, great quarterback. Do you agree?
Yeah, I do. And I'm not sure Tua's in a great spot based on what I saw of him last season.
No. Totally agree with you. I have one more question. I live in the middle of Tennessee, so we're eating up the Eddie George hire. Paul, I don't think that's a great hire. Deion Sanders has way too much coaching experience than Eddie George has. I just hope Eddie George is not being used as a publicity stunt for money-wise. I don't think I've ever heard of Eddie George coaching. Have you?
No, Freddie, he was here yesterday, and he has never coached. I've known Eddie for about 10 years, and you know, Eddie dabbled in broadcasting for a couple of years, and in addition to business, and then he became an actor. I believe this is accurate. I think I've coached as many as a head coach. I've coached in as many games as Eddie George.
Right. I have two buddies. One, I think you would be familiar with Thomas D. Woods, played at UT.
Oh, sure.
He and I went to the same high school together. And another buddy played for Coach Stallings at Alabama. So I reached out for their opinion, and they have the same opinion I do, that he's probably going to be 2-3, as they called it.
That's not good.
What do you think?
Well, here's the one thing I'll say, Freddie, and you know, I've covered college football a long time. And it's like anything else. The newness will wear off. The hardest part, I think, of any job, whether it's this job or whatever you do, is showing up every day. Because there are days, no matter how glamorous it seems, that are pretty bad. And Eddie George, you have to hope that yesterday wasn't the best day he's ever had as the Tennessee State coach.
That's the one that scares me. I think his best, and I actually made the comment, I think his best day is going to be the day he was introduced. I hope I'm wrong.
Well, you know, there's kind of a, people use that cliche about marriage, but we all know that's not accurate, of course.
Right.
you want your first day to be a good day, but you have to build towards something. And I don't know. I don't know the answer. I feel like I know him moderately well, but Deion Sanders is doing this for different reasons. Deion Sanders has got a megaphone. Eddie George is not that type of personality. I think he's an introvert for being an actor and a former player. And that doesn't mean you can't be successful, but There's a lot of hands you have to shake in an environment like that or anywhere else. We're up against the break. Kirk Herbstreit at the bottom of the next hour, and Dan Mullen coming up as well.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network beginning at 3 Eastern.